Welcome to the Mitch Hanks Show, originating four blocks from Wisconsin's capital. Mitch is the radio voice of uncommon sense. All sides of an argument are welcome here. Just be prepared to make one, as Mitch argues for truth, not victory. Politics, lifestyle, pop culture are all on the table. So get ready to participate on the Mitch Hanks Show.
Welcome back to the show. We had a little technical glitch there, but we are back now. Jed Sanborn and Rich Williams filling in for Mitch Hank today. And again, I want to one more time at least remind people that the website is now going to be MadisonTalks.com. So slightly different than what it was, MadisonTalks.com. So that's where you'll find the show in the future.
And I want to talk to Chris real quick. I appreciate the fact that she called, and I agree with lots of what she says. I don't agree with hate speech and those kinds of ideas. And I think that for those of you who remember the Skokie case, the KKK wanted to march in Skokie, Illinois, which is a suburb of Chicago, I believe, a very Jewish a suburb. And the Supreme Court struck down the idea that you could ban hate speech, because banning hate speech and the swastika doesn't mean just banning that. It also means banning anything else others might say is hate. And for example, there's a lot of people on the right, which I resent the fact that they think burning the American flag is a violation of the First Amendment. Absolutely not.
No, I agree. I think that's about private property rights. If it's your flag, you can burn it. You can do whatever you want to it. I might not like it or agree, but yeah, that's...
Well, it's the same with...
That one is... I don't know how many people we have left that actually want to stop people from burning flags. I'm sure there are people out there.
Well, but if you watch... I mean, Facebook, I have, you know, memes that go on there and says, agree if you, you know, press a like or agree if you think the American flag should not be burned.
Yeah, I did see one of those. But yeah, yeah. Yeah, and I got obviously irritated with Chris because... I thought the way she was hemming and hawing and was so unwilling to just clearly condemn any attempt to shut down a speaker on campus. And again, we're not just talking about violence here. We're talking about trying to burst into the venue or get into the venue, hold up signs, shout. Ben Shapiro was shouted down so he couldn't speak. I don't care if you think it's hate speech. I don't care if you think you want to try to characterize conservative ideas as you know, harmful to people, which I'll certainly debate anyone on that. That's, once you go down that road, where does it end? That's the problem.
And it has happened on the other foot. I mean, if those of us recall after 9/11, there were professors around the country who were going around to speak at colleges who claimed that 9/11 was an inside job. And I believe there was a professor in Colorado who was invited here to speak. And
You're talking about the guy that, that said that, you know, all the little Eichmanns that were killed. Yeah, what was that?
And I disagreed with him. And whether, like Chris, he probably should never have been invited to the university. But once invited, we ought to hear him speak. And I was against that. You had politicians, Republican politicians, decided we're going to cut spending off to university because we don't want that kind of speech. It goes both ways. And that's the real... The real greatness of the First Amendment is that it protects all of us, not just the things that we like to hear or things we want to hear, but it protects everything.
And I would argue, you might not like this too much, I would argue that what happens is when you start adopting this attitude like that you're so right, your positions are so right and someone else is so wrong that the ends justify the means, then you start to also see things like the IRS and Lois Lerner trying to shut down Tea Party groups, the John Doe investigation here in Wisconsin with John Chisholm and his abuse of power and his attempt to shut down conservatives that want to participate in politics in Wisconsin. Those are serious, serious acts and transgressions, but I think they stem from an attitude like, that side is so bad and so wrong, it's okay if we shut them up.
Well, I don't know if those are, you know, the exact the ideas that I would use or the I just think that when we, you know, we live in a liberal city. We have a University of Madison here. Obviously, it'd be a lot different if those of us on the left who were lived in, say, Biloxi, Mississippi or some very conservative places, you know, we might feel threatened. The point is of the First Amendment is that when there is someone who's invited to speak, whether I agree with them or not, they should be allowed to speak. That does not mean that people can't protest, protesting peacefully. What that means is you can go out and carry signs. You can debate if that's what's caused. But don't shout people down. It, for many of my liberal friends, it just makes them look right, and they aren't right.
Yep. Well, I have a bad feeling, though, that it's going to get worse. I don't see any signs. Now, I'm sympathetic to the argument. I've heard you've made it here today. I've heard others say that, like, what happened in Berkeley is these aren't really mainstream students. These are specific groups that come in with the intent of creating havoc. And that may be true. But if that is true and you don't want everyone on the left to be tarred by those people, then these administrators and law enforcement need to start stepping up and arresting people. And we need to start throwing the book at some people. By that, I just mean having real consequences for creating violent acts, about any kind of breaking of the law, trespassing to try to stop people from speaking. We need to start cracking down on it.
I think you're not going to get a lot of arguments from people on the left on that. I really don't.
Okay. Well, that's good. I maybe not on what you are calling the left. I think Chris and others would probably not want that to happen. Would want the police to stand back as they did in Berkeley. That's my guess. And I think a lot of college administrators are really sheepish about it. They might have sympathies with some of these protesters, and they don't want to get involved either. But anyway, stay with us. You're listening to The Mitch Hank Show. We'll be back shortly.
Mitch Hank for Atterbury, Cameron, Haig.
I'm proud to be sitting next to senior partner and a man who's been voted Wisconsin super lawyer multiple times, Eric Haig. How big or how small a case will you take on?
I've helped all sorts of people over the years, from very small cases up to multi-million dollar cases. We do try to be selective in the cases that we handle as a matter of economics and devoting the proper time that I can to a case. We do advise some people that if their case is small enough, they may be better off handling it themselves. Not everyone needs a lawyer. Sometimes it's not in their best interest to have a lawyer, and I've told many people over the years that your case is of modest enough value that I think you're better off handling this yourself. So it's only when we think we can make a meaningful difference in the outcome for them that we're willing to accept their case.
So when you need a lawyer, do what I did. Call Atterbury, Cameron, Haig and reach them at yourwisconsininjurylawyers.com. That's yourwisconsininjurylawyers.com.
In real estate, you want to work with Tim Rail.
I did work with another realtor, and I had the house on the market for close to a year before Tim stepped in. With Tim, my house was sold in 4 months. Tim Rail had so much more to give. Tim was always there and accommodated my schedule.
Let's get ink on paper today with Realtor Tim Rail of Coldwell Banker Success, 698-7653.
I would recommend Tim Rail any day.
Tim Rail, 698-7653. We'd like to remind you that every day right here, 11 to noon, right after the Mitch Hank Show, we present Wide World of Radio. I'm your host, Bob Abella, and I pay tribute to the stars of radio's golden age. Today we enjoy the annex of Summerfield's lovable bachelor, the great Gildersleeve, from his character role on the Fibber McGee and Molly series to his own highly rated radio program. The fun begins when guest Jim Backus outswindles Gildy in a real estate deal. Don't miss Wide World of Radio right after the Mitch Hank Show, today, 11 to noon.
Talk radio will never be the same. The uncommon sense of Mitch Hank has been unleashed worldwide. This is the all-new Mitch Hank Show.
Hey, there he is. How's it going?
I'm having a stroke.
Are you going to shake my hand or what?
I'm having a stroke.
Wow, you're not even moving your arm.
I'm having a stroke.
Are you okay?
I'm having a stroke.
When someone is having a stroke, they may not be able to say it with words, but their body language will tell you loud and clear.
I'm having a stroke.
You just need to know the sudden signs. Look for FAST, F-A-S-T. F, face drooping. A, arm weakness. Or S, speech difficulty. Then T, time. Time to call 911 immediately, because the sooner they get to the hospital, the sooner they'll get treatment. And that can make a remarkable difference in their recovery. Know the sudden signs. Face, arm, speech, time. Spot a stroke fast. Visit strokeassociation.org. Brought to you by the American Stroke Association and the Ad Council.
It's important to plan ahead for emergencies. Like the storm. When it kicked in, we had a plan. We were able to get in touch with each other in no time.
I had no idea how to find each other.
My husband kept the kids occupied.
Our son, but There was no reception. Everything was down.
I felt like we handled everything very well.
I had to try and stay calm.
The whole experience was fine.
It was the most frightening 10 hours of my life.
It was kind of like a little family adventure.
Her hopes will never happen to her.
I remember the relief of being together.
I realized he was out there all alone.
If there's one piece of advice I'd offer other moms out there, it's to stay calm and keep to the plan.
Some parents plan ahead. Some don't. Make sure you know where to find your family in an emergency. Start your plan at ready.gov. A public service announcement brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Mitch Hanks Show. Mitch seeks the truth by inviting all sides of the issue. Thanks for listening to the Mitch Hanks Show.
Chili Peppers. Welcome back to the show. This is the Mitch Hanks Show. Rich Williams and Jed Sanborn filling in. Got about, 10:20 a.m. on a fine Wednesday. So going to shift gears a little, although if people want to call in and talk about the Trump stuff we've done, that's fine. We're happy to go back to that. It's 210-1667 if you want to jump in here. However, something else happened yesterday. Betsy DeVos, the nomination for Secretary of the Department of Education, was confirmed, although Vice President Mike Pence, in the first time ever, a vice president had to cast a deciding vote in a cabinet position nomination, had to break the tie in order to confirm her. And I know the left is really,
worst cabinet member ever chosen.
That's right. This is the talking point we're hearing. Oh, she doesn't know anything about public education. She wasn't a teacher. So what? First of all, the Secretary of the Department of Education doesn't make low-level decisions about curriculum and how schools run. It's a much broader 30,000-foot view of education. All this is about is because she supports school choice, an issue for which I've never heard a good argument against, ever.
Well, there are lots of good arguments, and the idea that it's just school choice that she supports is just not true. She supports school choice with Christian religious overtones about it. That's what she wants.
Well, that just means that in a school choice system, a voucher system, that Christian schools would be eligible to participate.
Anybody can go to any school they want if they're able to pay the tuition there. This idea that we're going to strengthen our schools by taking the kids out of the school where the parents are involved, by putting them in a parochial school, and I know she'd rather have everybody go into a Christian school, it's not going to make public schools any better. It's going to make them worse.
Here's the question, do you care about, quote-unquote, public schools, which really means public school teachers and their unions, or do you care about education? Because if what you really care about most is getting the best possible education for as many kids as possible, what difference does it make if it's a government-run school or if it's a charter school
if
it's a private religious school?
I would agree if that was the case. That isn't the case for most of these people who push choice or vouchers.
What are you talking about?
If you look at the vouchers that are being taken by Republicans, the credit they've given out in Wisconsin, more people who are in the top 20% tax bracket, they're taking advantage of it. The people in the lower 20% are the smallest group taking advantage of these tax credits.
That's not a policy decision. You're talking about
they know that because people generally who are socioeconomically depressed, their parents aren't involved in their kids' education. These are the people who aren't going to take advantage of these tax credits.
You're talking only in very, very select areas where they've introduced some private school vouchers. But that is not the case in most of the situation. In Milwaukee, where they have a school choice program, these are poor kids, especially in the charter programs. If anyone out there has ever seen that documentary called Waiting for Superman, they fill these gymnasiums with kids and parents all on pins and needles, hoping that their names are going to be called in a lottery so that they can go to a charter school when their name isn't called, they're crying because that's how disappointed they are. And people that want to stand in the way of that, of more charter schools, more parents and kids being able to have that choice, to me, I'm still waiting to hear a good argument.
Well, again, I think the original argument is these people are the people who are professing they care about kids really only care about affluent Christian kids.
That's nonsense. They don't care that about is such nonsense.
They don't
Give
care
me
about
evidence
the inner
of that.
City. Well, you can look at who's taking advantage of the tax credits in Wisconsin. The people
in Milwaukee's the biggest program.
That's the voucher program. When you talk about what the new tax credit that was put in the books last.
A tax credit. Yeah, that's just because. In order to take advantage of a tax credit, you've got to pay private school tuition. So obviously you're not going to have low-income people using that tax credit.
Right, but these schools, these aren't advocating allowing poor kids to go to their school. They're allowing you know, rich white kids to go to their schools with the tax credit.
Yeah, but see,
those schools aren't allowing in the vouchers for the lower 20% of the kids that are in the schools that are having problems.
Most of these schools, most of what we call under the umbrella of school choice, meaning charters as well as private schools with vouchers, the vast majority of those are not picking selective, well-off kids. These are kids that either get there through lottery system or through a purposeful effort to help low-income people get these vouchers. I mean, most of the vouchers are private foundational programs that are meant towards helping poor children. And
yeah, I disagree with the veracity of that statement. I don't believe that the people who are having this discussion, especially in Wisconsin and other places throughout, they've disbanded the union in Wisconsin. That's not good enough.
Now they didn't disband the union. They made it no longer compulsory to join it.
But basically has disbanded the teachers union in Wisconsin.
The teachers disbanded it then. They made a personal decision not to pay dues.
Okay, so the union is weakened now in Wisconsin to near nothing. And then now we're going to tell people, well, we're going to give rich people tax credits to go to their private schools.
Yeah, okay. I love how you steered this to tax credits.
The poorer kids aren't going to those schools. The poor kids are going to charter schools that aren't doing any better in Wisconsin than the public schools are.
The reason why this argument is so insincere and so disingenuous.
I'm sincere.
Because if there was ever a proposal, let's just say, let's have universal choice. Universal choice.
We had universal choice.
Every kid, with vouchers.
Yes.
Universal voucher program, then that every kid has a amount of money assigned to them to be educated, and they can use it in a government school, they can use it in a charter, they can use it in a private.
And what you'll have is you'll have the poorest among us go to the public schools, and the richest among us go to the better schools, and they wouldn't
allow the poor kids to go in. Which is what's happening now. No, that's what's happening now. Under a choice program, poorer kids would get an opportunity to go to better schools. You're preventing.
That's not what I'm preventing because that's not actually what is happening, especially in the city of Madison. The kids.
We don't have choice in Madison.
The kids who need it the most, their parents are uninvolved in their education. That is the main problem with socioeconomically depressed students in this country. Their parents aren't involved. And if you give them the voucher, they're not going to go to those schools. They're going to go to the public schools.
You don't know that. No, that isn't true. Again, I refer you to that documentary. Those were poor African-American families.
A specific city of New York City, which you cannot compare to the rest of the United States or Wisconsin.
For some school choice. So, yeah, what you're saying about parents not involved, that might be true of some, of course. But maybe they're not involved because they don't feel like they have any ability to make a choice, to choose something better. They're just told, your kid's going here. That's it, period.
Well, they're told that because that's the city they've chosen to live in. They can move. If people want to go to a different school, then move.
Yeah, but that's not a good argument against just having more choice. Why is it that in everything else in life,
who's giving them choice? They can go to the school if they choose to pay. Why do I have to pay for public vouchers for other
kids? Do we have to keep going with that? Because I've already stipulated, I know, yes, people with money can go to private schools. We're talking about enabling people to use the taxpayer money assigned to them to educate their kids and make a choice. Okay? So let's just agree to that stipulation. But anyway, we'll be right back. 210-1667 if you want to join us.
Commonly asked questions are, why do we need an on-hold message? How do we write a script? How long should the message be? How does the message get played? How much does it cost? I'm Bob of Abella Creative Services, and a telephone on-hold message speaks directly to your target audience while they're on hold with your company. Continuously advertises only your business without the clutter of competitive ads and for just a fraction of conventional advertising costs. At Bob Abella Creative Services, we'll help you draft a well-written script, provide the appropriate announcer, music, or sound effects, and the studio time and expertise to put it all together. We'll also provide you with any special equipment you might need to play your on-hold message. Even though we probably have more experience than most other on-hold message companies, will cost you less. Let Bob Abella Creative Services stretch your advertising dollar with an on-hold message that provides your customers with real, actionable solutions to their problems. Bob Abella Creative Services gets results. Just send us an email at bacsgetsresults@gmail.com. That's bacsgetsresults@gmail.com. MadisonTalks.com is the home of Madison's most creative talk radio. If you have a serious gift of gab, you have stories to share, political, social, or religious positions to express, contact Madison Talks to have your own 60-minute weekly podcast recorded and posted for the world to hear. Have a new book to promote? Madison Talks is the ideal place to promote it. Fly solo or line up guests for your weekly live talk session. When your 60-minute program is finished live streaming, it'll be posted as a podcast to MadisonTalks.com for listening 24/7. Take your message to the world with MadisonTalks.com. Call 608-210-1667 or visit MadisonTalks.com. That's 608-210-1667 or visit MadisonTalks.com. MadisonTalks.com, looking for your creative commentary.
New Mitch Hanks Show would like to thank our sponsors. We're grateful for their support of the all-new Mitch Hanks Show.
Like all new parents, my husband and I want what's best for our baby. When it was time for our daughter's immunizations, we wanted the facts. So we carefully researched vaccines. We spoke with doctors and other experts and asked some tough questions. We decided that vaccines were the best thing for our child. It can be a dangerous world out there. Vaccine safety rumors brought polio back to Africa. Children in Europe and here in America are once again suffering from measles. Don't let misinformation about vaccines put our children at risk. Protect your family from preventable diseases. Learn the facts about vaccines so you can make the best healthcare decisions for your family. Vaccines save lives. Thank you.
This message is brought to you by Every Child by Two and the American Academy of Pediatrics. For more information, log on to vaccinateyourbaby.org or aap.org.
Isn't this dinner party wonderful?
You know, it was almost canceled. Did you hear that Bill was really sick with the flu 2 weeks ago?
No. Is he okay?
It was serious. Bill got sick quickly with a high fever. Jeanette called the doctor right away. The doctor said it was flu and prescribed a medication that helped him get back on his feet.
Well, thank goodness.
That Jeanette got her flu shot because, you know, she's expecting. I guess that was another thing you didn't know.
A message from the Department of Health and Human Services.
Hey, I'm going out to buy those shelves for the closet.
Oh, will you pick up 800 lumen bulbs?
Honey, I love you, but 800 more flowers? You'll give the neighbors a real reason to think we're wacky.
Not flower bulbs, light bulbs.
Come on, Dad. Lumens tell you how bright a bulb is. Our 60-watt bulbs give off about 800 lumens. We can replace them with new 800 lumen bulbs. Bulbs just as bright that use much less energy.
So, we'll save money.
Yes, and we can use that money to increase my allowance.
Right. Wise guy.
Worth a try.
So, you got that?
Got it. No tulips, no watts, 800 lumens, and more savings.
He got it.
Lumens, the new way to shop for light. Learn more at energysavers.gov. That's energysavers.gov. A message from the U.S. Department of Energy.
Welcome to the Mitch Hanks Show, originating four blocks from Wisconsin's capital. Mitch is the radio voice of uncommon sense. All sides of an argument are welcome here. Just be prepared to make one, as Mitch argues for truth, not victory. Politics, lifestyle, pop culture are all on the table. So get ready to participate on The Mitch Hanks Show.
Oh, it got cut off. All right. I was waiting for the big explosion. Oh, no, now we're back. Now we're talking about ice cream cones. We get some weird stuff going on here. Anyway, welcome back to the Mitch Hank Show, MadisonTalks.com. I'm here with Rich Williams. I'm Jed Sanborn. We're talking about a contentious issue, especially on social media. A lot of posts about on social media about Betsy DeVos confirmed as the new secretary of the Department of Education. It's my contention. She's unqualified. She hasn't worked in public education. Blah, blah, blah.
Well, she is unqualified. There's no question about that. She's an advocate for school choice. That's her only bona fide. She's never worked at a school. She's never worked to run a school.
But running a school is nothing like being the secretary of the Department of Education.
Donating to a cause doesn't make you an expert in the cause.
She's been working she hasn't just donated. She's been personally involved in the cause for a long time. All this is about trying to carry the water for teachers' unions to prevent school choice. Look at the two Republicans who split off, Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski. The only two Republicans that get big donations from the NEA compared to other Republicans. Now, Susan Collins is from Maine. So as a conservative, I kind of feel like she might be the best that any conservatives can hope for from Maine. But Lisa Murkowski, there's no excuse for that. And this shows you, she's basically a nepotism politician. Well, she's there because of her father. I'm talking to other conservatives right now. She needs to be primaried again. She actually was already. People might remember in Alaska, she was primaried and lost the primary.
But then won the independent.
And then
vote.
Won with a write-in candidacy. But they got to do that again.
I think that we have to make a distinction here. There's vouchers and there's tax credits. And I think for some of us, we aren't comfortable with using taxpayer dollars to support any.
But they both do.
Any religious organization, whether it be a school.
Why?
Because for the same reason, I don't think we should have public money going to proselytize our children religiously.
Yeah, but it's not against your will. The only kids that would be proselytized to are there because their parents chose that school. And by the way, we already do that with college money. We have lots of government money going to college students that go to religious colleges like Notre Dame and others. So
I don't think the two are a distinction. There's a big distinction between going to a four-year university and going to your local voucher school. And quite frankly, a lot of these tax credits, when parents use these, they aren't allowing all kids to go to the same school. They get to pick and choose the kids they get to have in that school.
Yeah, that is the oldest argument that's been debunked so many times.
It's not debunked. So,
no,
for example,
So
if the kids get kicked out of that school, they don't go to another private school. Then they're just dumped into the public school.
Yeah, which is where everyone's dumped in right now. That argument that the private schools like pick and choose the cream of the crop has been so thoroughly debunked.
It isn't debunked.
They don't follow the same rules. That is not true.
It is true.
First of all, charters are generally a lottery. I already said they're a lottery pick. It's luck of the draw. And even private schools, you talk about, like, if you go look at private Catholic schools in inner cities in this country, they're not picking the cream of the crop. They're providing a social function. They're trying to help some of the poorest kids in their cities.
I find this argument to be a lot different if there were lots of Muslim schools in Madison, Wisconsin, or in Milwaukee where they were having a voucher school.
I'd say let them.
The caterwaul of Republicans would be
nonsense.
Crazy.
Nonsense.
We're indoctrinating our kids with Muslim religion.
Nonsense. That would not happen.
It would happen.
No, because any parents that wanted to choose to send their kids to a Muslim school, nobody would care. Not the conservatives that
advocate for
school choice.
I don't have an issue with sending your kids anywhere you want. Just don't expect the taxpayers to pay for it.
We've already stipulated to that you would allow, at least you wouldn't round up all kids and frog march them to public schools. Okay, we get it. You allow parents to pay tuition. That's not what this discussion is about. We're talking about using the government money that everyone's taxed on, right? We all get taxed to pay for schools. Letting parents use that money earmarked for their child to choose any school. Because here's the deal. Here's one thing I find interesting. I think Rich, as a liberal or however you want to describe yourself, and even people out there that would use the word progressive to describe themselves, if I were to call them a socialist, they would be offended. right? But somehow when it comes to education, socialism is deemed better, right? In everything other area of life, we consider it good to have as many choices and as much competition as possible. And we're buying our TVs.
The modern day public school was invented in the late 40s, early 50s. I don't think everybody was calling them socialist then.
I'm talking about now.
About the idea that the idea of a public school makes this society better. Learning things
public education. Yes. Make society better. Doesn't have to be a public school. That's the difference. That's why I'm saying the socialism, this is like a socialist idea.
I really
that somehow it's better that we try to keep as many people trapped in the government-run schools as possible. That somehow, but in every other area of our life, we don't want that to happen, right? We don't want government-run grocery stores.
We have government-run police stations. We have government-run fire stations. Yeah. We have government-run ambulances.
There's good reasons for that, because it's not practical to have private police stations. Well, but it is practical to have private schools.
I'm not comfortable. Again, I think this goes down to religious liberty. I'm not comfortable with proselytizing students in a religious school just because we say it's a better public education. But I'm just not.
I think that argument is so incredibly weak.
If you
want
to pay for your kid to go to Christian or Catholic or Muslim or Jewish schools, pay for it yourself.
What difference does it make if they're paying for themselves or if they're using public money earmarked for their child to choose that school?
Because the advocates of this particular, you know, whether it's a private school or a charter school, wants to proselytize kids. They want them to be good little Christians.
No, that's nonsense.
It is. It's not nonsense.
I would actually call that a mean caricature. These are people. You're talking about guys like Milton Friedman was huge in the school choice movement. That's a Jewish guy who's basically a secular Jewish man. He was one of the leading advocates of school choice vouchers or tax credits if you can't get the vouchers. That's the only reason. I mean, I think everyone would prefer to just have the voucher system, but tax credits are sometimes turned to because the political pressure against vouchers is so great, even though it shouldn't be. There's no good argument against it. So it's not about saying, oh, we're going to make all people, we're going to take Rich Williams' kids and make them be good little Christians. That's nonsense.
It isn't nonsense.
Oh,
if you look
sure
at a lot of
is.
The leaders in this, they're...
You would never have to choose to send your kid to a religious school.
No, but
what happens is
you start weeding out, and it's already happened in Madison. You start having this weeding out process where you have parents that are in good standing with the public school. And then they get this notion that, oh, the public schools aren't doing as good as a job as someone else. Then they start to leave. And then bit by bit, piece by piece, the public school becomes only inhabited by parents, kids who don't give a rat's rear end. So the rest of us who can afford an education, either with a tax credit or be lucky enough to get a voucher, we get to go to those schools. But the majority of the kids who actually go to public school,
yep,
will always go to public school, are going to get a raw deal.
And I'll say what I said again. The reason why I think that argument is so disingenuous is because even if you said let's have a universal voucher program, every single kid that wants to choose a school and use a voucher can, that you would still be, the opposition would be even greater. So that, I mean, this argument, oh, it's going to be the less kids left behind. That argument also falls flat.
I don't think I sound
flat.
Like that. Oh, I don't think I whine like that.
Yeah. Well, okay. But that opposition also falls so flat because we're talking about already having public schools in some places in this country, in some cities in this country, that are so bad that the worst case nightmare scenario, the hypothetical that you describe, already exists. But it's not because of people leaving. It's just because the school is that bad. But anyway, George is on the line. We better let him on. George, welcome to the show.
It's
Chris again. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Sorry.
Go ahead.
Hello?
Hi, Chris.
Hi. I actually followed the school hearings very, very closely. I attended several of them. And the ones I couldn't attend, I watched them with Sky. So I'm very familiar with this issue. And your guest I'm not sure who's the guest here, but the person that's speaking for the charter schools.
Yeah, that would be me.
I was wondering, are you aware of the fact that the teachers at those schools do not have to face the same requirements that our public school teachers do? They don't have to have background checks for being sexual predators. They don't need to meet the same criteria for their qualifications. There's no public control of the funds that go into those schools.
yeah, okay. I think that argument is utter nonsense because, first of all, I'm very familiar with a number of private schools that I've actually worked with in my businesses.
I went off to private school.
The schools, the teachers there are just fine. Are you going to try to argue, oh, they don't have background checks, so the private schools are going to hire pedophiles to teach our kids, and the parents that make a choice to go there
are pedophiles.
The parents that make a choice to send their kids there, they're not smart enough to understand that, so we need people like you to help them.
Okay, well, my mother was a parochial school teacher.
Mm-hmm.
I went all through parochial school, so I know a little bit about parochial school as well.
And so do I.
And I can tell you that the standards are not the same.
They're better.
That's not true.
I think the education is good, and it was good when we had the nuns doing it for free with slave labor. But now that the nuns aren't there, I think that we have to come up with another model. But what about the fact that the public has absolutely no control over what these schools do?
You know why that argument absolutely falls flat on its face?
No.
Is because, I'm going to finish my sentence here. Is because it's nobody's that argument would actually have merit if people were being forced to go to these private schools.
No.
But the parents choose it. But basically, underlying what you're saying is that you know better than the parents of the kids that might choose these schools. You know better, and you want to veto their decision.
There's no private school when public money is supporting these schools. That's no longer a private school. I mean, I'm responsible
for those schools. I don't care
what
nomenclature you want to use. We're talking
about the taxpayer.
Yeah, I mean,
we have
no responsibility and oversight of any of these private schools that are receiving taxpayer money.
You're going to sit here and tell me that the reason you're against school vouchers is because the private schools that might participate in the program are going to be so inferior and not be able to educate our kids.
I think that the idea
we're already measuring that. We already know that that's false.
It's
the exact opposite. They're getting better performance
that
in charter schools and private schools.
That isn't true.
It is true.
I've had this conversation many times with many people. Yes, if you were going to measure the public school against a private school, the aggregate grades or scores are better. Yes, but you're not. That's not the same. You're talking about the cream of the crop versus the diversity of students.
I've already told you that's false. And when we're talking about charter schools in New York City, they're literally in the same building as the public school, and they outperform them.
Really? Well, which kind of charter schools are there? Because there's more than one kind of charter schools. There's the ones that are outside the public purview, and then there are the ones that are charter schools that come through the public school system that the public school system oversees, and they are an extension of the public school system, which is very, very different than these private schools that our money's being funneled into.
This whole argument depends on the assertion you're making that parents... Wait a minute, parents! That parents that would choose a different school don't know as much as you, and they would make dumb choices and send their kids to schools and get inferior education because they're not as wise as you are.
They're not playing by the same rules. I mean, so dollars can be spent differently. In a public school, if a kid moves into the neighborhood and has drastic, you know, disabilities, the school has to pay for that. It could cost hundreds of thousands of dollars. There are private schools who take tax credits. There may be a kid who wants to go. They're not going to spend $500,000 for an elevator for that kid.
I would be more than happy to have escalated vouchers for special
needs. It's not going to happen.
That's why you're against it. Right.
What about the voucher school in Milwaukee that was opened up and the person absconded with all of the money and there was no school? What about that? We have perfect
What
examples.
About all the teachers in Atlanta that there was a giant scandal where they were cheating on their own certification tests, and then other scandals where they were cheating on the students' tests to inflate the results? If you want to go with little anecdotal stories, we could go all day long.
This is a Wisconsin story. It doesn't matter.
What difference does it make?
Well,
it's an anecdote.
Have you read the legislation? Did you attend any of the hearings? Do you know what you're talking about? Because it doesn't sound like you do.
It doesn't, huh?
Well,
because you keep telling me.
Because you don't like that your arguments are so weak.
My arguments are not weak. I'm telling you that we have no control over the money when it goes into those schools. Isn't that a Republican issue? I don't understand.
Why do we need control?
Why
is there need to be so much control?
Well, I guess the same reason when cities don't
know how they're being spent.
No, the implication is that because the parents that might choose that school somehow are not able to make a wise choice.
Who made that? I never said that they weren't allowed. They weren't wise.
That's the implication.
No, I think the implication is this. The implication is, and I think, is a simple one, that if you allow the people who are going to go to these better schools, as you say, voucher and private schools are better than public schools, you're going to just drain the public school out of parents who are involved in the school, and you're going to be left with, you know, basically
a prison system. That's a hypothetical scenario.
And then there are some of us who agree, you know what?
We have schools that exist already that are that way.
If you want to have an equal process, if it's going to say that private school X has to take in every kid that public school down the street has to take in, then I think it's a more rational argument. But that's not happening. There are lots of disabled kids in this community
who can't go. See, the thing is, the only arguments against this choice voucher program is either A, some extremist example that, there's going to be these disabled kids, and like as if there aren't solutions we could come up with, or this hypothetical that, you're going to abandon all just the worst kids are going to be left
in
the public
school. But this is why they exempt the schools from making those rules. They exempt it. I mean, in the legislation, there was exemptions for a lot of these rules.
Facts,
I mean, it's not, I'm not making this up. There is exemptions for kids that are disabled as far as the tax credit goes. I mean, there are exemptions. They don't have to adhere to the same kind of rigorous testing that the public school has to do. I mean, if they're going to get public money, then they ought to adhere to the same rules. I mean, the playing field isn't level.
I'd say teacher parent choice is enough of a check on that. But yes, go ahead, Chris.
What about the taxpayers that don't have children in school? What about the taxpayers that want a well-educated populace so that we have nurses, so that we have doctors, so that we have firefighters, so that we have police?
Okay, let me ask you a question. This gets to this idea that I just talked about, that people that say they're capitalists and don't like being called socialists, you just made an implication. Okay, then I guess it doesn't work on you. But other people, see, you just made an implication that socialism works better than choice and competition. Yeah, right. We've seen that all over the world.
Well, it's worked here in lots of other ways. I mean, we're talking
about fun in your vacation in Venezuela.
It's talking about
look at the Netherlands.
Really, comparing Venezuela to the United States with Social Security and Medicare, unemployment insurance, state compensation.
The broader argument I'm making
is this idea that there's some detachment from socialism and what strict capitalism. Where does that utopia belong? It's not in the United States. We do all kinds of socialist things in this country.
Okay, and I'm happy to talk about them and how they don't work.
Where is this place that you dream of where it's happening really well?
I never said there was a capitalist utopia. I'm saying that all these people, excluding Chris on the line here, people that would strongly object to being called socialists, but are Democrats, but they'll fight tooth and nail, like Rich here, against choice and competition in education. But yet,
I have no problem with choice and competitions of lots of things. There's things that I don't think there should be choice and competition. Firefighters, police officers.
And I explained the difference already between those. No, not healthcare. We need choice and competition.
No, we don't.
But there's a difference between
industry.
Police and fire and schools.
You want to talk healthcare?
Military.
We can't cover everything at once, so we're gonna have to
Social
stick
Security.
With schools.
People are dying because we don't cover health care the way that we should. People are dying literally every day.
I think there are palatable ways where you could maybe convince me that a voucher or a tax credit would be fair, but until legislatures start making it an equal playing field, that those schools that are deemed to get public money have to apply, they have to have the same rules that the public schools
do. And the reason why I find that argument,
because what happens is that the public schools become a dumping ground.
Yeah. The reason why I find that argument so bankrupt, you're basically saying until you have a perfect system in place, I can't support this. While right now, as we speak, we have terrible schools with terrible, we're losing yet another generation
of
African American kids in this country who are not getting an education, that are dropped.
Right.
What are the graduation rates, huh?
Right.
In some of these cities.
So the idea is that, so it's the teachers and the administration that's causing this problem within the community of African Americans? Is that
the concept of when you have a,
so in Madison,
a
when you have
monopoly situation, you always have worse results at higher cost. So and that's exactly what we have.
Well, that's a dangerous theory, because then you're suggesting that African-Americans aren't as...
It's a dangerous theory.
The numbers just don't provide. What we have here is a problem with socioeconomics. We have a group of people who are below the poverty line who are performing very poorly in our schools. Now, if you're suggesting that Madison's top 10%, because they're the wealthier ones, are doing fantastic in our high schools, going to all the great colleges... They're having the same teachers that the other kids are having, but their performance is less. Now,
Madison is not on the same level as some of these other big cities. My point was that you are nitpicking that any kind of – you might be able to support a voucher system if they accounted for every little variable you can come up with. We have a crisis in places.
Caused by the Republican Party and the NOVAP.
Yeah, because the Republicans control the schools. Right, Republicans have been in charge of all these inner cities, right? These inner cities where the schools are the worst are controlled by Republicans.
Do you know what the biggest predictor of student success is? Their socioeconomic situation in their life.
Yeah,
and the Republicans continually fight people having a living wage.
And Chris,
we're not going to go off on every socialist tangent you want to go down.
And again, this is where, you know, Republicans, a lot of the states, if you measure the states that they control, Alabama, Louisiana, Mississippi, Tennessee, their public schools are horrible.
I notice that you pick all the people that are
Florida,
cultural,
South Carolina. Yeah. Arizona,
the ones that don't pay their way. Yeah,
these schools, if you look at marginal graduation rates, and you take the most liberal of the states, so Vermont, Wisconsin, Minnesota, Washington, Oregon, they outperform all these Republican-controlled states out of bounds.
That is the worst manipulation of data. You know
it's what true.
First of all, you're comparing rural. What you just tried to do is compare rural cultural southern states to a couple northern rural northern places like Vermont. How about we look at Milwaukee, Detroit, Chicago, New York, Washington, D.C., Philadelphia?
Aren't you doing the same thing
no,
I just did?
But these are all areas.
I mean, who's controlling the school districts in those big states, those states that are filled with Republicans?
No, these are,
they're not liberals.
These are Democrats.
Well, so why are there schools they're failing because they're...
Well, look, it was Chris that just tried to blame Republicans for bad schools.
Well, I did blame Republicans. I didn't try to. I did.
I didn't say you tried to. I said you did.
Yeah, well, I did. No Child Left Behind was the worst piece of legislation I've ever seen passed because it was not funded. Just like everything else, we don't invest in our country anymore.
I was actually
people.
A teacher when that got passed, and that was horrible.
And how many years ago was that? Didn't we just get done with 8 years of Barack Obama?
He rescinded it, though. He gave states ways to opt out of it.
I know, he had his own different program that didn't make
race
any
to the
difference
top.
Either.
Race to the top.
Yeah, that fixed everything. Yeah, the idea here is that there is no... My point is, there is no good argument to be against school choice and vouchers. We want competition, just like in all of the areas of lives that things that we are going really well, like our cell phones and our TVs and our cars. These are all things that we have the maximum amount of competition and choice. We should introduce those elements into our education system, particularly in places where we have a crisis, where Rich, you know, you and I were at the same school meeting here in Madison that said African-American students in one particular school were meeting minimal requirements 3% the time.
But the notion is that you blame – so the African-American kids aren't doing well because of why? Because they're not going to St. Mary Goretti, they're not going to a private school, or the teachers are horrible.
No, I'm not here saying I have all the solutions. I'm saying – for you to have such a high bar to even be allow some other choices and options to come in is what's irrational.
The kids we need to help aren't going to go to those schools.
I don't pretend to have the solution. Let's let the market work so that we can see what solutions will work. And they're the ones that will get the students.
Why don't we have accountability?
And the kids that aren't able to get into
because we have a monopoly. You don't have accountability when you have a monopoly.
No.
That's exactly why.
Schools.
We have socialism.
I'm trying to ask you.
We don't have accountability under socialism, Chris.
That's not true. I'm trying to ask you, though, why you can agree with schools that get taxpayer money not having to account for it.
Because they are, the accountability, I'll tell you why. All the accountability you need is the fact that parents have to choose it. Does U.S. Cellular have government accountability, or do they lose customers to T-Mobile if they don't do a good job? That's all it. That's all it takes.
My children are no longer in school. I still pay taxes. I want that money accounted for. I want to know where it's going.
Pure choice.
And I want to have a say in it.
It's wide open choice and competition is all the accountability you need.
It's interesting that Republicans don't feel the same way with food stamps. They want to make sure they can only buy certain things.
Right.
It's not, you know, there's no choice there.
Or per diems that they need a raise for as our roads go undone.
That's a really, that's a great analogy. All right, is this the end of the show, right here, Mr. Producer?
Okay,
I got to quickly say goodbye. Thank you for Mitch. Thank you, Chris, for the lively discussion. We disagree. I appreciate your participation, though, in the show. Thanks, Rich.
Thanks,
Mitch Hank. Thank you to Chris, our producer, or Mike, our producers. So everyone have a great day. Talk to you later.